So the topic tonight is Shavuos. Obviously, Shavuos is around the bend. But I'm going to share with you a thought process, which leads me eventually to Shavuos. So you will not see necessarily the connection immediately, but we'll get there eventually. I want to start on page 2. It's source number 5. Because we're holding in the tkufa of Svira, different minhagim regards to when people are knowing the Beilus of Svira. But I want to see the Gemara. The Gemara talks about Svira and see how that eventually gives us a message towards Shavuos as well. So the Gemara says, Tanya Rishuimer, Nasadam Isha Bayaldusa, Isa Isha Baziknusa. A person was married in his youth and he was no longer, his wife passed away. So he should continue to, he should marry somebody again. The fact that he had children in his youth is not a reason not to continue to have as he gets older. Pasuk says in Kehelis, you sow in the morning, and you don't think that when it comes evening that you shouldn't stop. So you don't know which one will be better, and if both are good, for sure good. Person had talmidim in his youth, he should have in his earlier years, he should still have more talmidim. Don't say, I've done my job, I'm finished. Yotzigaben, as they say, and bring the same pasuk. And then on that, the Gemara brings the story of Omru. Zugim Tamidim Megibas Adam Tapras. Rekiva had 12,000 pairs of Tamidim. Mekulam Mesim Perkechod Bim Deshalonogo Kabbazeh Bezeh. Vayarlam Shamem. They passed away in one period of time. And the world was desolate. Achabar Rekiva, it's all Rabbi Sena Shabadorim. Mishanolahem. And he taught them. The Rabbi Sena Shabadorim were Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, Behem Hamidu Torah Oseshon. That gave the support for Torah in that point in time. Tana Bekulam Mesim Pesach Anat Zeres. Okay, so thinking about Rabbi Kiva and trying to understand Rabbi Kiva, I mean, we can't. Rabbi Kiva is beyond our comprehension of Rabbi Kiva. Moshe Rabbeinu says about Rabbi Kiva that when he saw, he was able to get a glimpse of Rabbi Kiva's Torah, and he said he didn't understand it, number one, and then he said to Rabbi Kadosh Baruch Hu, if you have such a person, why are you giving Torah through me? You should be giving Torah through Rabbi Kiva. That's how Moshe Rabbeinu related to Rabbi Kiva. But to add to the concept that Rabbi Kiva had 24,000 Talmidim, that number itself is a mind-boggling statement, that a person should be able to have 24,000 Talmidim. He was able to. He had such a power of hashpoa that he's able to impact 24,000 talmidim. And the Gemara says that the Rabbi Shomei, which means that these are real talmidim, and they were of a caliber that they're worthy of being Rabbi Kiva's talmidim. When they were gone, the world was empty, which means that they actually had filled it. But they weren't just like individuals who weren't worthy; they were worthy. One of the explanations why we have the velus of the period of Svira is not so much the loss of the individuals; it's the loss of the Torah. If we try and picture Klal Yisrael, imagine those 24,000 people had stayed alive. Imagine 24,000 people, 24,000 talmidim who had the Torah of Rabbi Kiva. And then we know later on that the Gemara says in Megillah, in the beginning of the first parak, the Gemara says that all of the Torah we have is through Rabbi Kiva. Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, Stam Sifri is Rabbi Yehuda, Sam Tosefta. Rabbi Shimon says Bezoyer, all of his teaching is the trumas of Rabbi Kiva's Torah. It's the cream of Rabbi Kiva's Torah. But the more says Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Kiva, is Rabbi Meir. Mekulam seems solid with Rabbi Kiva. They're all rooted in Rabbi Kiva's Torah. So all of the Torah we have, the Torah Shabbat, the Torah Shabbat, the Nister, the Nigla, we have is Rabbi Kiva. And there's 24,000 people which had this Torah. Imagine they had stayed alive. And they had Talmidim. And the Talmidim had Talmidim. We don't know what Klal Yisrael would look like to this day. It would be a different Klal Yisrael. the impact of the loss of those 25,000 people is something which is felt to this day, and that's why we have a velus during the period of Sfira of the loss of that impact on Klai. So that's one of the explanations for why we're mourning this event of many years ago. 25,000, it's a terrible loss, but it's we've had many greater losses of people in Klai so than 24,000 people, sadly. The answer is we're not mourning the individuals, we're mourning the loss of Torah. And Rabbi Akiva loses 24,000 tamidim of that caliber. He would be a broken man. He should be a broken man. It's how does he pick up his head the next morning? You know, he sees them dying. He sees them dying in a period of 23 days. He sees them dying at the rate of 700 to 800 people dying a day daily. He doesn't know how to stop it. He can't stop it. And he sees this loss. How does he pick up his head? How does he continue? And Rabbi Akiva goes to the Rabbi Tinah Shebadarim. He sets over again with 5 Talmidim. Like, and they have this, you know, we go from this gigantic yeshiva to 5 people around the table. Right? That's the picture. You know, it's like, you could... I can't put, you know, I can't, again, we can't picture Rabbi Akiva, but, you know, if we could, we'd say, like, he's sitting at this table, he sees his 5 people around the table, and he's picturing this yeshiva of 24,000 Talmidim, and he's saying, like, Gevald in the belt. What's it? It's all, you know, how do you do it? And these 5 Talmidim, Chachamim were Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, etc., they were to be the Chachamim at that point in time. They weren't his Talmidim that he built from the ground up. It's the pain of losing so much he built from the ground up to go where people already had Torah, and he was teaching them, right? And Rabbi Akiva did it. So it's to try and be misbind a little bit in that thought process of Rabbi Akiva, how he did that. That was where my thought process started. I'm trying to picture, can I project my emotions into Rabbi Akiva? I don't think I could, but, you know, I'm, at least from my vantage point, I'm trying to picture, what was Rabbi Akiva thinking during those moments? What was Rabbi Akiva, how was Rabbi Akiva processing what was going on? So that's how this shiur started, that I was trying to process that. Go back to the first page, please. So the second source. The second source also gives us a window into Rabbi Akiva, which is it's teaching us something. I'm not going to read the whole source inside, but the Gemara says a story. This is more at the end of Makkos, the last piece of Gemara in Masechta Makkos. The Gemara says that the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva was after the Beis Hamikdash had been destroyed, and these people were walking up towards Yerushalayim. And they reached Har HaTzofim, Mount Scopus, and they were able now to see the actual, they were high up, but they could now see into the Makom Mikdash, and they tore their clothing. We have to remember, these were some of them who actually had seen the Beis Hamikdash standing. And they saw the glory of the Beis Hamikdash, and now they see the Beis Hamikdash instead of desolation. You know, we go to the Kotel, we're in pain. Picture this person who saw the Beis Hamikdash standing, and he sees the Makom Mikdash and is destroyed, and the pain that he has. So their kriya, when they tore their clothing, it was a true kriya. They're sitting on this makom. Kima shegiel the harabayas, they kept walking towards the harabayas. Ra shul shiyotim beis kachay kadoshim. They see a fox. They see a fox walking out of the place where the kadosh kadoshim was. So they start crying, which is that's what we expect the reaction to be. A person who saw they saw the Beis Hamikdash. They understood the Kedusha. These are the Gedolim of Klal Yisrael. These are the leaders of Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. And their understanding of the Kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash and the Kohen Gadol and the Kodesh Kedoshim and Yom Kippur. They're picturing that picture and they see an animal walking in that place. So they start crying. If I could put words into the Gemara's mouth, they weren't crying; they were sobbing. They were crying uncontrollably. They had the pain is it has to be mind-boggling pain. I once read an article about a person who went back to Ger Chassid, who went back to the city of Ger after the war. The Ger, during the Yom Neroyim, could have 100,000 people in the city of Ger. 100,000 Chassidim were there in the city of Ger. And he comes back and it's desolate. And from, he's describing that desolation. So if that picture, Kal v'chomer, to the picture of the person picturing the Beis Hamikdash, the throngs of the Beis Hamikdash, somebody, even just the lack of human presence. My son went to Meron this year, so he said, they asked him that there's 500,000 people there. He says you're going on a field trip with all of Klal Yisrael. That's basically what it feels like, right? So you can picture Aliyah LeRegel. You have the Mor Ben Asi saying he one time saw 600,000 people on the Har Habayis. You saw 600,000 people. You picture that, and now it's desolate. It's just the pain has to be. It has to be a searing pain. And Rekiva starts to laugh. So they said to Rekiva, "What are you laughing about? What's so funny?" So he says, "Why are you crying?" And so the whole conversation is wondering why you're crying, because it was the most obvious. She says, so they say to him, the place where it says Azara Karev Yumos, that no human being was allowed to go there, and if he goes there, he's deserving of death. And now there's animals, there's foxes walking there. We're not going to cry. Like what type of question is that? He says, "That's why I'm laughing." And he brings the Gemara says that the pasuk says Italy Adam Nemonim the Bershim. The pasuk says that the Rosh Hashanah connects two nevuahs together: the nevuah of Uriah Hakayan and Zechariah ben Yerach Yahu. See, combines Novi Zechariah and the Novi Uriah. So the Mor says Uriah lived a few hundred years before Zechariah. What's the connection between the two nevuahs? Zechariah has a nevuah that there's going to be a time when basically this is going to be rebuilt. Yerushalayim is going to be rebuilt. Uriah has a nevuah of destruction, and the Rosh Hashanah ties the two nevuahs together. So the Rosh Hashanah ties the two nevuahs together. I understood that you can't have the nevuah of the being rebuilt unless the nevuah of the total destruction is fulfilled. Now that I see the nevuah of total destruction is fulfilled, I can hope for the nevuah of the being rebuilt. Okay, it's a beautiful story. Right? We still would cry when we went there, right? Even with this picture now, seeing this nevuah of the binyan in the future, but our reaction is going to be crying. And why was Rekiva's reaction laughing? See, he feels confident that all the nevuahs, but it's not here yet. Beshema will be fulfilled. How did Rekiva relate to that as a situation of laughing, not a situation of crying? Okay. Two more quotes from Rabbi Akiva, and let's see if we can. We'll go back to the other ones. I have seven quotes here, even though the sign says six, but I have seven quotes over here from Rabbi Akiva. The Mor says the beginning of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was an Amoritz. The Mor says Amsochim that Rabbi Akiva was an Amoritz, and he had such a hatred to the Talmid Chachamim that he says, "If I see a Talmid Chacham, I want to bite him like when a donkey bites." The Mor says, "Why a bite of a donkey? Because it breaks the bones. When a donkey, it's a very, very powerful bite, and it will actually break the bone. I had such a hatred to Talmid Chachamim. I wanted to bite them not just a bite, but a bite would break their bones." Okay, that's Rabbi Akiva's description of himself when he was before he became a Talmid Chacham. And the Mor says, "How did Rabbi Akiva become a Talmid Chacham?" So the famous story that he was one time, he was standing there by a spring, by a well, and he sees that there's a rock there which has a hole worn in it, and he says, "Where did this hole come from?" He says that the water was able to drip and wore away the rock to the point that now there's a hole in the rock. So he made a Kal v'chomer. He says, "If water, which is not such a hard thing, can bore a hole in a rock, which is a very hard thing. So Torah, which is, we know, is very powerful, very strong, can bore a hole into my heart, which is soft." And he went to learn. Okay, so holochu benoy b'yoshvei tzimalam d'tunoikus. So he went and he's starting learning by the lam d'tunoikus. And he said, "Rebbe, lam deini Torah." So he said, "Teach me." Ochas b'kiva b'roish luach. So they had their little tablets that they would write their notes on. Rekiva was writing on one side, his son was writing on the other side. He went to Kita Aleph, right? He went to Pre-1A. He went to Aleph Beis. Lo Shalakul, he had not learned anything before in his life. He's going to the Haskolas Chumash. I remember we had in Tells, this goes back in the 1975, so... Even, you know, even now, there's no Baal Tshuva yeshiva in Cleveland, Ohio, but you know, but there's program at least for Baal Tshuva. But 1975, what was available? There was Tells Yeshiva. There was an individual fellow was in his mid-30s, had become frum, and he wanted to learn Gemara. He went to the Telshi High School Machina, and he sat in shir with 14-year-olds. And he came every day, and he was there. You know, he would prepare, and he would come, and he would sit in shir, and you know, he was a member of the shir, right? And I remember like thinking then, like, you know, the strength to do that. You're going to sit with, you know, young men. I remember when I was teaching in Cleveland, we had a program for, I taught a Haskolas Gemara Shir for Baal HaBatim. We had a night program. And I'm picturing some of these fellows. One fellow was listed in Who's Who in chemistry in the country. Another fellow was the chief IT individual for American Greetings. American Greetings is this multi-billionaire dollar company. I once went to the headquarters of American Greetings. It's in Cleveland. It's a Stone family, right? Right. And you go into the headquarters and you walk in and there's a little cart in the corner, which is the peddler cart that Jacob Saperstein, Irving's father, started selling greeting cards from this little cart. And then around the room you see they have aerial photographs of all of their factories across, of the 21 factories across the country producing their different strawberry shortcake and Ziggy and all the different things that they have, their greeting cards. The smallest one was 500,000 square feet. They have the square footage under each one. 21 factories, the smallest one is 500,000 square feet. Some of them are over 1 million square feet. And this fellow is the chief IT individual for all of American Greetings. And he's coming to my Haskolas Gemara Shir. So eventually the Shir morphed into that they wanted a little bit more. So two of them, these two used to come out to Yeshiva Talmud once a week. And once they said the comment, there's this 13-year-old Bacher sitting next to him, like learning Gemara and explaining Gemara. And they're sitting there breaking their teeth on the Gemara. I remember one of them, when he was reading the Gemara, it's the first time he's learning, they're Bali Tshuva, their background, they never had a background. If there's a way to read the word wrong, he read it wrong. Like, there's a Gemara, I remember the word Sue, he read it so, toe, two, any which way you can read it, not the way I told him to read it, he would read it. He persevered, and Baruch Hashem, he's finished Shas at this point in his life. And he says, you can't imagine how painful it is. I walk out into the secular world, and I'm like, there's a head honcho over here, this top banana, I walk in over here, and I'm behind the 13-year-old. And here's this fellow who's 30 sitting in the class with the 13-year-olds. Here's Rabbi Akiva who's 40-year-old sitting in class with the 5-year-olds. You got to picture it. And that's Rabbi Akiva. And, okay, so he, so Kosovo Aleph Beis Belimda, he mamash started from Aleph Beis. Aleph Tuf, he went through Aleph Beis. His mama started from Aleph Beis. If you picture this, a 40-year-old man starting from Aleph Beis. So everyone, one time, I told one of my chavarim, he says, Rabbi Akiva can start at the age of 40. We can leave. He says, yeah, I'm over 40. Now what do I do? Okay, you can do it at 52. We can start. We can start learning how to. So the more says he continued. Eventually he knew everything. But how do you have the strength? How do you have the strength to sit into that class? Okay. So the first one, number one, we have to recha kamecha. Rabbi Kiva mezek klal gadol b'tara. So Rabbi Kiva says that the klal gadol in Tara is a have to recha kamecha. If I want to bring together a thought which will encapsulate the Torah, v'hafta recha kamecha gets it. That's the thought which encapsulates Torah. Now, I just want to clarify this a little bit. This is slightly off topic. There's a fascinating question. The Kli Yakar asks on this. This is the Taras Kahanim. This is a halachic medrash. It's not a. It's not a. It's not a. It's not a. I got it to a minute. This is a halachic medrash. where Kiva says this. But Kliyokr asks on it, there's a Gemara in Makkos, right before that Gemara which we quoted, the Gemara says that there are 613 mitzvahs, and Dabar HaMelech came and he condensed them into all of these 613 mitzvahs into 11 main ideas, and Yishai came and condensed it into six. And finally, Chabakuk comes and condenses it into one, Betzadik Be'Munosa Yichya. That a person should the mitzvah of Munah, that's the mitzvah which everything funnels down to. So he says, is it B'Haftar Yichya Kamecher? Is it Betzadik Be'Munosa Yichya? All right, that was his question. Now, you can, and to say it's a machloikis, we don't want to say it's a machloikis. You know, you say it's a machloikis on these things. So he suggests that v'haftar echa kamocha is the kol gadol in mitzvahs ben adam l'chaver, right? V'haftar echa kamocha basically will give you, if you understand that, you're going to fulfill all the mitzvahs ben adam l'chaver, right? And amuno will give you the foundation for all the mitzvahs ben adam l'malka. That's what the Kiyakar suggests they answer. Now, it's a very difficult answer, because you look at the Gemara, the Gemara says there's 613, which is ben adam l'chaver and ben adam l'malka. Comes Yeshaya and condenses it to 11. And if you look at the 11 over there, there's some bit out of the Malka. Excuse me. Comes David and condenses it to 11. So the more it's still in Kapitel Tesvav. It says La Ragal La Shainoi is one of them, and it says Nishma Rabba La Yomir. Right? Nishma he'll keep his shavuos, and he won't say Lashon Hara. So it says both. It says both types in there. And the same thing with Yeshaya. And eventually it comes down to one. It means everything. So what's the Kliyakar? So the Kliyakar's answer is difficult to understand. So after Echel Kamocha has to be a klal which works for Ben Adam L'Malkam as well. And there's a way to answer how the two should not be a stira. That's not my point for tonight. But Rekiva says that there's a mitzvah after Echel Kamocha, it's klal gadol b'tera. Rekiva in Obis, in Pirkei Obis, says Chavu Adam Shneber B'Tzalim. Kiba Yisera Nadas Loi, right, number six. Who are Armis? We keep talking Chavu Adam Shneber B'Tzalim. Kiba Yisera Nadas Loi Shneber B'Tzalim. Human beings were created in the Tzalim Elokim. Okay. Then it says Chavim Yisrael Shnikru Barim LaMalkim. Kiba Yisera Nadas Lohem Shnikru Barim LaMalkim. Chavim Yisrael Shnitzlam Kli Chemdo. Kiba Yisera Nadas Lohem Shnitzlam Kli Chemdo. So Rekiva sees there's a special dear place that a human being has because he's created in Tzelem Elokim. Klai Yisrael is even more dear because they're considered bottom lamokim. There is even more special because the Torah is given to them. So Rekiva's 3 points. In this mitzvah of Rechel Kamoicha, what is the greatest impediment? One of the great impediments to the mitzvah of Rechel Kamoicha. So the Bali Musar suggests something. The Bali Musar and the Bali Machshava, the Chassidus suggest that one of the biggest impediments to the mitzvah of Haftar Rechel Kamocha is the person doesn't like himself. You have to like yourself first before you can like somebody else. Why? If you look at the mitzvah of Haftar Rechel Kamocha, the Ramban says, what are we asking you to do? We're asking you to love somebody just like you love yourself. That's not something which is the Seichel can comprehend. In general, I like myself more like other people. It says, what's the issue? The issue is the meat of kina. Don't be jealous. There's a word in Yiddish which is called fragin. Right? Be happy in somebody else's fortune. I should want for somebody else the same good fortune as I want for myself. I want to have children. My children to be successful. He should have just as much success. You know, I want my kids to be successful, and I want his kids also to be successful, but I want mine to be a little more successful. Right, I like to be successful in business and have money, and a good position and status in the community. I like him also to have money and success and status in the community, but I like to be a little bit better, right? Etc. etc. Like I like to say a shiur when I got 95 people, and he should have a shiur and he should get 85 people, right? So the Ramban says no. What you're asked to do is that you should want for somebody else as much as you want for yourself. To remove from us the midah of kina hagrua, the lowly midah of kina of jealousy. That's the mitzvah of Haftar Rechel Kamocha. Mitzvah of Haftar Rechel Kamocha is the mitzvah of say of loy sachmoid. Loy sachmoid is the loy sasei. Don't be jealous. Don't desire what somebody else has. Be happy that they should have theirs. Right? And the mitzvah of say is the Haftar Rechel Kamocha. That's what the Ramban understands, the mitzvah of Haftar Rechel Kamocha. Now, why would you be jealous of somebody? The Ibn Ezra asked the question, how do you legislate an emotion? Now, the Gemara actually says on Lesach, but he's talking about the mitzvah of Lesach, that it could be it's only if you do an action. But the Rambam says that there's two in the Dibros Rishonos, it says Lesach, but the Dibros Achronos it says Loisis Ave, it says Lesach, and not Loisis Ave. So Rama said there's two mitzvahs, there's an loisah say of actually trying to acquire that's loisah, and the desire to get it is loisah. See, even the desire alone is a problem. How do you legislate a desire? How do you legislate a feeling I wish I had what somebody else has? I can control myself, I won't do anything about it. How do you legislate a desire? That's the Ibn Ezra's question. So they say from the text of the Biskarov said, that if a person, if you ever watch a person who's walking on a tightrope, and he's walking over Niagara Falls, he might be a lowly fellow who has, he has typhus and he has jealousy, etc. But I guarantee you one thing: when he's walking across the tightrope over Niagara Falls, he's thinking about one thing: walking across the tightrope across Niagara Falls, not about who he's jealous of, and not about his desires, nothing else. He's focusing on one thing. So the Biskarov said that the answer to the Ibn Ezra's question is, when you're walking through life, understanding you're always in the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, you're always walking with that awareness of that pocket of the year of a Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence, you're not thinking about anything else but just walking on that tightrope. That's a madriga which I don't think I'm holding anywhere near of, doing. Comprehending is I can imagine such a thing. I'm not holding anywhere near that. I think there's a different answer. I'm going to use a mushal. Advice for public speakers is don't use analogies to kings, because we don't have kings nowadays and people don't relate to kings. And I'm going to use analogy with a king because it doesn't work with anything else. It doesn't work with like a democratic ruler, we're talking about a king with power of life and death. There are places in this world to this day that have, there's kings like that, but we don't normally picture that. But if you go back a few hundred years ago, we lived in a world where there was kings which had the power of life and death. And imagine there was such a king who was an extremely benevolent individual, an extremely intelligent individual, extremely caring individual. And he loved his citizens, and he loved the people of his country tremendously, and his only desire was to do the best for them. And he actually made it possible, if you wished, you could go and have appointments to meet him. And you could talk with him, discuss your issues, and he would give advice, and he would give financial support, and he would make himself available. And all of the resources of this tremendously wealthy country were put at the availability to this individual who was speaking to the king. Okay, sounds like a nice thing. So you make your appointment, and obviously you get an appointment, takes many months to get into the king, and you get a 3-hour session with the king. 3-hour session with the king. Right? So obviously you're very scared because this is the king, he has the power of life and death, and you're walking into that, and we're picturing ourselves waiting in the waiting room, about to walk in, and it's very scary. We don't know what the reaction, how's it going to go. We walk in, and it's the most wonderful experience you could ever imagine. Here is this very powerful being who has unlimited resources, in our minds, almost unlimited resources, very intelligent, focused on my needs, and thinking all just about me for 3 hours. Very powerful power of concentration. He's focusing on me for 3 hours. And he listens and he gives sagacious advice. And he's empathetic. And he gives me some types of resources available. And he gives them. So what's the emotion we're going to feel at that point in time?
Gratitude.
What else?
Overjoyed.
Good. What else?
Gratitude.
A state of security. A feeling of warmth. A protection. The analogy which I take it back to is, you're about 5-6 years old, and you went to the amusement park for the day. You're driving back, and it's getting dark, and your parents are in the front seat. And you have the most wonderful day that you can imagine, and the most powerful beings in the world are sitting in the front of your car, and you fall asleep in total manucha, like, and there's nothing bad in the world, because you're being taken care of by this most powerful being called your parents. David HaMelech says that the feeling of being in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's arms is the feeling as a child, a babe in his mother's arms. Chaim Shalevitz has a beautiful, beautiful thought. I've said this over before. There's a Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos says that fascinating Gemara. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yossi says that one of the malachas is, we know that malachas on Shabbos to be held culpable for malachas on Shabbos, and it has to be done in a way where it's a positive act, not a negative act. So one of the questions is the malach of Soser of demolition is a negative act. So it has to be done for the purpose of rebuilding. I'm taking apart this building to use the materials to rebuild. So it's not a negative act. It's a positive act because I'm going to use the materials, etc. Comes from Rashi. Rashi says that it's only if a person plans to rebuild it in the same place, because even though I'm planning to use the materials, so then in that sense it's positive, but the building which was here in this place is gone. There's elements of negativity. So it's not good. It only if he plans, Amanas, leave this beam kind by you. So Morris says, one second. All of the Lama Tes Malachas we learned from the Mishkan, where did you have demolition in the Mishkan? It was all building. Well, you did when you would take the Mishkan apart to move to the next place. So the actual source for the Malacha of Soser is to take it apart, to put it somewhere else, not here. So how can you tell me that the Malacha is only if you plan to rebuild it in the same place? That's the Morris question. So the Morris answers... The more answers, since it says in the pasuk Al Pi Hashem Yachon, Al Pi Hashem Yisoh, that they traveled Al Pi Hashem, it's like it's rebuilt in the same place. So what's the Morris Terence? So Chaim Shalevitz says a pshat, which I'm not sure it's pshat in the Gemara, but the concept is gevaldik. He says, imagine a woman gets onto a bus in Tel Aviv to travel to Yerushalayim, and she's carrying a child in her arms. So I ask you, where is the child? The answer is, the child is, it's in the mother's arms. Now, the bus travels to Yerushalayim and asks you, where's the child? The answer is, it's mother's arms. No, it's not. The child was in Tel Aviv, and the child's in Yerushalayim. The answer, that's not true. The definition of where a child is in its mother's arms. Kleisel, in the Midbar, their physical place was not how they were defined. They were in a Kodesh Baruch Hu's arms. Apiyah Shem Yisov means they were being taken in, embraced by Kodesh Baruch Hu to the point that the physical place was not the definition of where they were. That's how he understands the Gemara. While you're in that emotion, you see your neighbor who you've been playing Keeping Up with the Joneses with for the last 15 years. And he walks by with the latest version of his horse and buggy, and he pulls the horse's tail to honk the horse, right? You should notice him. Ha ha, look, I got a beautiful horse. Ha ha, you. What's your response? Gesunte hate. I couldn't care less. I'm happy for you. I'm so happy with where I am. With this feeling of warmth and security and love and understanding my value, that I'm so important to this powerful being, you know what? I'm totally happy you should have whatever you want. That's the Yiddish word forgive. That's what forgive means. That's Lo Sachmed. Zot Rebbe Akiva, if you can understand Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem and what that means, the Chavivus of a human being, that he's created B'Tzelem Elohim. I'm not jealous of anybody else. I understand my value. Why am I jealous? Suppose it's Rekha Batsama's Kina, that the withering of bones is Kina. So the word Atsama's also means bones. It also means your Atmius, your being, your reality. I feel myself withered. I sit in a group, and this person is quicker than me. This person is more knowledgeable than me. This person is smarter than me. This person is more witty than me. This person is more handsome than I am. This person is... Everybody's got something more than me. What am I? I'm nothing. Rekha Batsama's. My Atmius is withering. Because I'm comparing myself to everybody around me. Why are you comparing yourself to anybody around you? Why are you looking over your shoulder? Why are you defining yourself by anybody else? Because you don't see the value inside of yourself. The Russia put you in this world. If the most powerful being in the world, the omnipotent, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, with his omniscience, says, you belong here the way you are, with all of your chesroness, means I'm perfect. I'm perfectly a mess. That's the way I'm supposed to be. That's exactly how the Creator made me. So I don't feel bad about myself. I feel good about myself. I'm in a Kodesh Baruch Hu's arms. Chavon Mishinim B'Tzelem. From that vantage point, there's no kina. That's the mitzvah of Haftar Rechakim Mecha. Once you accept yourself as being valuable, and I'm very comfortable with who I am and what I am, from that vantage point, I can now look around the world. You know what? I'm not feeling reminded every time I see somebody how I'm deficient. Because if I'm going to feel reminded every time I see somebody that I'm deficient, my reaction is going to be, I don't like you. Because you remind me of what I don't like about myself. So the Rechim of Ahavtarecha Kamoicha is predicated on Kamoicha, that you like yourself to start with. Rabbi Akiva says, let's go learn. So the Samura says, Rabbi Akiva says, I see that you can, that it can penetrate my heart. So you see from Rabbi Akiva's thought process, he had no problem as a 40-year-old to go sitting and learning. He didn't go because he thought it wouldn't be successful. So once he realized it'll be successful, why not? Now most of us, if we're 40-year-olds, we have not learned anything. What's our impediment to go? Because I don't think it'll be successful. That's not the problem. The problem is like, it's a pasmanisht. I'm uncomfortable. What are people going to think? Rikim had no problems going into that classroom as a Kita Aleph, and learning Aleph Beis as a 40-year-old, together with his son and all of his classmates. And can you say Lashon Hara about Klai? So I don't know whether you can or you can't, but I imagine that the classmate teased him, you know? I mean, the little kids, that's what the little kids do, you know? Ha, ha, ha! Look at that guy with the beard over there, you know? Learning Aleph Beis. Plus, such an Amoritz. We're better than him. We're 5 years old learning Aleph. He's 50, right? Didn't bother Rabbi Akiva. Because he understood he had no problem with who he was. So why was he jealous of Talmud Chacham? The Gemara says, because he felt that what was rightfully his, they had taken away from him. He didn't have the opportunity to get what they had, and that bothered him. Not that he didn't like himself. The Gemara says, when a person learns Torah in front of an Amor, it's like taking the individual's wife and taking advantage of her in front of him. Because it's his. You're taking away from him. The Amor sees the Talmud Chacham learning Torah, knows deep down that he should be able to do that also, and he wants to do it also, and he can't. And he feels so horrible, he's upset. That's where the hatred comes from. The hatred comes from, because it's rooted in an element of kina, not in the person, but in what he has. So Rekiba says, no. But once you tell me I can do it, I'm willing to, I'm going for it. That was his only problem was, I don't believe I can do it. Okay, you could do it. Go. That's the same way Rekiba says, Chavad Adam B'Tzalem. He understood the value of a human being. He understood his value. He understood that Rabbi Akiva can say, "Haftarichel kamoichel." Haftarichel kamoichel means that you recognize your relationship with your Creator, how valuable you are in the eyes of the Creator. That is the klal gadol of the whole Torah, because that's going to be a foundation for everything. Every mitzvah bedalam lamakom bedalam chaveroi is about how Kadosh Baruch Hu relates to us and we relate to Him. That's foundational. That's the klal gadol of the Torah. Okay, so now Rabbi Akiva, here he is, and he's lost. The Beis HaMikdash, we lost the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Akiva saw the Beis HaMikdash, and he saw the pain of the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Akiva did not lose. It's the sight of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the value that we have in that relationship. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is upset at us. He doesn't like us anymore. We're not important to Him. He threw us out. Right? These are natural reactions that we would have. So it's not just that we lost the Beis HaMikdash, but we lost what that means. The Beis HaMikdash is a place where you meet your greet your Creator. No. He didn't lose that. He understood that this is going to be a sign of that there's going to be a better relationship coming. There's a word from Yisrael Salanter. Yisrael Salanter says, it goes much better in Yiddish than in English, so I'll give it to you in Yiddish first, then we'll translate it. It says, Medavton enisht nachton. Medavton enisht opton. Medavton enisht oifton. You have to do, and don't imitate. Imitate in Yiddish is called nachton. You have to do. Don't define yourself by somebody else. Do what's right for you. Don't imitate. Medavton enisht opton. You have to do, not to get it over with. Supposed to do this thing, done with, Vaitrikagana. No, you do it because you're seriously doing it. But most importantly, you have to do an nisht oiftan. You have to do and not accomplish. The goal over here isn't success. The goal is doing. Now, why do we want to see success in our endeavors? Because it's nice to see success in our endeavors, right? But, and let's say we don't see success in our endeavors. Now what? What message does it say to me that I don't like that? I did what the Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted me to do. I tried. Didn't work. So what? Why do I have difficulty with that? The answer is because I'm going to define my worth by what I accomplished. We all want to be successful. We have different definitions of success. One person's success is he's very wealthy. One person's successful, he's able to accomplish a lot. One person's success is that people look up to him. Each person has a definition of success. But why are we why is that important? Why are any of them important? What's really important is you understand that you're living in a world with your creator. He thinks you're the most valuable being in the world because he put you here. And he's the most valuable being in the world. If he put you here, it means you're important. What you accomplish, that's not up to you. You do what the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants you to do, and the person decides whether it's going to be successful or not. Why are you... I tried it, it didn't work. What does it have to do with anything? But we grapple with this all the time because we need... A person has to know that they're valuable. Rav Chaskel Levinstein one time said, it says, Yedem mensch, dafalefel kovet yedotog. Every person needs to have a spoonful of kovet every day. This is the Baal Musar Reb Chatzkel. The Baal Musar Reb Chatzkel was his daughter said that they lived in awe of him. In the house, his daughters described the awe they had for their father. And Reb Chatzkel is saying every person needs a spoonful of kovet every day. You know, you learn Reb Chatzkel. Reb Chatzkel is a fascinating person. You learn his svarim, Reb Chatzkel Levinstein. You learn his svarim. Yom Yerushalayim. He has a series of shmuzin that he says, that he said, we have the shmuzin that he said in the lead up to the Six-Day War, and the shmuzin during the war, and the shmuzin after the war. And there's a little booklet, I remember one of my rebbeim who learned by Reb Chatzkel and heard the shmuzin, would take these out during Yom Neroyim, right before Moshe Rosh Hashanah and before Neil Yom Kippur, he would learn it for a few minutes. And he would start crying his heart out. Because you read those shmuzin, and it's like every single sentence is a sledgehammer of how horrible you are. Like, you know, you got to change, it's not good enough, and you're like, it's like, wow. Then you look at his letters, and like you open up a letter, look at the letter, and he says, you know, you need to be a little more gaiva. You know, there's a shmuz he says a person about gaiva, he's about like a Zornik, and he's like, you know, and the shmuz says, you need a little more gaiva, you gotta believe in yourself a little more. Like, you know, like, whoa. The answer is there's an overall concept, but you know, the Vardikers, they used to work on this idea of, you know, not becoming belly gaiva. So they used to like, sometimes they would make fools out of themselves, right? So but somebody says there's different Peshittas and Musar. So Bobo writes, there's no such thing as different Peshittas and Musar. So Sabotka is about godless of them, how great human beings are, mankind is, etc. And the Vardik is about how lowly mankind is, you know. I said, I can guarantee you one thing. If you didn't have an intrinsic understanding of how valuable you were, and you spent weeks and weeks and weeks making fools out of yourself, you'd be so depressed, you'd probably commit suicide. Right? They knew how valuable they were. They didn't. Their point was not to define themselves by somebody else's approbation, because they knew they were valuable in the eyes of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Not that they thought they were lowly. They knew how valuable they were. They did not want to let somebody else's definition of them define it. Every person has to know that they're valuable. If you're not valuable, let me off the world. If I'm not here for a reason, so what am I? Why should I feel good? How can I live like that? I know I'm here for a reason. How do I know? Kadosh Baruch Hu put me here, and He doesn't make mistakes. And He made me with my personality, my background, my challenges, everything. I'm the mess that I am. He made it. Now, how well I've done with it? Okay, well, I have a job to try and do as best as I can. But He made me like this. He likes me flawed. Because He liked me not flawed. He wouldn't make me flawed. He would make me born into the most wonderful circumstances with the most wonderful meters. You know, that's not what He wanted. He made me like this. And He doesn't make mistakes. So I'm valuable. I'm great. Okay, I have to work. Right, but don't define myself as somebody else. Chavad Mashiach B'Tselem means don't let somebody else define you. So Rabbi Akiva says, I'm not defined by little kids. But it also means that you don't have to be successful, quote unquote, to feel good about yourself. My job is the Russian put me here to do. And He gave me karchos, so I'm going to use my karchos as best as I can. So I taught 24,000 Talmidim. They're gone. So I start with 5. Like, what's the problem? Rabbi Akiva didn't sit there, you know, and obviously he felt bad that he lost his meeting. He mourned them. But that had nothing to do with, well, you know, I'm a failure. Like, we can imagine an individual doesn't have what's called this healthy self-esteem, because this is like healthy to the nth degree, right? What would the self statements be? This must be, I must be flawed. Look at my Talmidim. How many Talmidim died? Must be something wrong with me. Why should I try to teach again? I tried, and I gave this matana to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the Baruch Hu didn't accept it. He doesn't like what I did. We can imagine these thoughts processes going through our minds. Rav Akiva says, none of this. That's not my job. I don't know why the Baruch Hu took them away. The more it gives a reason. Was it Rav Akiva's fault? Maybe. You know, were people shushing about Rav Akiva in the shul in the back? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, you know, you can't listen about Klai Yisrael, but I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu also had people saying listen her about him. Like, you know. So Rav Akiva walked into town, and people say, aha, he's the Rosh Hashiva who had such bad meetings, his whole Samina died. I don't know what they're saying. Maybe they're saying horrible things about Rav Akiva. Right? And he thinks he's going to hold to those five people down in the south and they're going to accomplish anything. Hey, garnished, you know, they're not going to like him, not going to count them anywhere. I don't know what they're saying. And Rav Akiva's like, whoa. Like, slow down. I'm not defining myself by my success. Medavton and nisht oifton, you have to do. Because the Rosh Hashem gave you kaychas, and he wants you to do, use your kaychas. What you're supposed to accomplish, that's his business. Every mitzvah, the Rechav HaZavah says, every mitzvah that you do, the success of the mitzvah is not in your hands. Never was in your hands. You get scarred for the choice to try. The Russian might, you might choose and then it doesn't work. Loyal Lane, a person chooses an aveir is the same thing. A person chooses, chas v'shalom, to kill somebody. And he pulls the trigger and shoots the gun. Does it have to kill another person? Maybe he'll miss. Maybe it won't hit him in a place which is going to kill him. Is he less of a ritzeach than the person who actually killed him? So in Bezen Shalmat, they can't do anything to him. But the Chabad says that in Shemayim, he goes to the exact same Gehenna. It's the guy who was successful, quote unquote. Because the reward and punishment is based on what's in your power. Whether people live or die is not in your power. That's Rosham's decision. Whether you're successful in the mitzvah is in Rosham's power. The person has the best intent in the whole world. He tries the best he can. It doesn't work. But the scar is for trying. It's for doing. So that's the Rav Akiva who's able to rebuild after losing 24,000 Talmidim. Because Rav Akiva understood, he understood the value of mankind is not defined by our success. It's defined because the Rosh Hashanah created us. We are valuable because the Rosh Hashanah put us here. We know that we are valuable because the Rosh Hashanah put us here. Chibad Yisrael Nadas Loi. We know it. It's clear to us. We know it with Lashon of Yediyah, which means total understanding, and we should all have this, Rav Akiva is saying. Everybody should have this level of understanding, of clarity, of how valuable we are. It should be clear to us, like Yediyah is clear without any question. It's part of our innermost being. And from that vantage point, something to hate. But that also means I have a very clear relationship, understand my relationship with my Creator. That's the foundation of Kol Torah Kula. The Haftarich HaMerech is the foundation of Kol Torah Kula. That's what Rav Akiva is saying. Okay, I want to say one last point over here. So we discussed number one and number two, number four, number five, and number six. We skipped number three. So I want to talk about number three for a second. And then, okay. So this is the last mission of Masechtas Yuma. Famous statement from Rav Akiva became a song. So that's why people know it. Rav Akiva, Shrechem Yisrael, Klai Yisrael is so fortunate. Who brings you the process of Tahara? This is talking about, Mishnah talking about over there, the process of Yom Kippur is a process of cleansing the person, purifying the person, the atonement, removing the virus. Avichem Shemashemayim. Shenemar Zaratelechemayim Taharim Utahartem. The Rishon says, I'm going to sprinkle the water of purity upon you and I will matar you. Another pasuk says, Mikveh Yisrael Hashem, Mamikveh Mataris HaTemeyim, Avakadosh Baruch Hu Mataris Yisrael. Famous Mishnah. So what's Rav Akiva saying? The pasuk says, Mikveh Yisrael Hashem. So the mikveh, just like Kadosh Baruch Hu was matar, the mikveh is matar the Temeyim, the mikveh for Klal Yisrael, the source of tar for Klal Yisrael is Hashem. Problem is, you look at the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, and the pasuk over the mikveh does not mean a mikveh, it means hope. The source of hope of Klal Yisrael, Lashon of Kaveil Hashem Chazak Yemetzibecha, it's not talking about a mikveh. It's talking about hope. So, that's a beautiful thought, but it's not what the pasuk says. Right? So, interesting. Like, Rav Akiva just takes it totally out of context. Okay. What's the opposite of the mikveh, of tikvah? What's the opposite of tikvah? You're excellent. So, if you can turn to page 5. And this is a halachic chazanish. It's not Bezemhen min yirush yisera. They're discussing what's called yirush. El Yonah, what is yirush? So the halacha by an aveda, if you lose an aveda and you're miyayish on the aveda, a person is despairs of hope of getting the aveda back. So the finder's allowed to keep it. The chol yirush, the second line, psichi be ma'at tikva. Every yirush, there's a little bit of hope in it. Chol b'tikva psichi be yirush. And every tikva, there's a little bit, there's pockets of yirush. You can't measure it exactly. And the more then discusses, say this is a halachic. The more it's explained in the Rishim and the Rabbanon, what's called the valid level of yirush to allow somebody to take the item or not. But he says the opposite of tikva is yirush. Opposite of yirush is tikva. And every tikva is a little bit of yirush, and every yirush is a little bit of tikva. You lose your item. I hope to get it back. Yeah, you know, depending on how pessimistic or optimistic I am, I'd say, you know, 95% of them gonna get it back. But you might not. Listen, it happens sometimes, you know. You have the other guy say, I forget it, I'm never gonna see it again. It might happen, you know. The opposite of tikva is yirush. My Rabbi Kiva is Rabbi Kiva who doesn't have yirush. My Rabbi Kiva is Rabbi Kiva who sees the world as a world of tikva. There's a beautiful morale on that Gemara in Endomachus. So what's Rabbi Kiva saying? Like, what is he saying? He says, let's understand something. I don't know, some of you have heard some of my shmuzin, so I sometimes have conversations with interesting things. I've had conversations with ants, right? Ants talk to me, right? So I'm going to have a conversation with a seed right now, okay? Right? This little seed, and we're about to plant it in the ground. The little seed's like, what are you doing to me? He says, well, I'm putting it in the ground. He says, you know, but I like the sun. I like the stars. I like the wind. I like the rain. You know? He says, I promise you, you go into the ground, out of you is going to come this beautiful tree with leaves and fruits. So the seed says, okay, I'm in. You know, it's worth it. Put the seed into the ground, right? Cover it over. It's dark in there. And the seed says, it's dark in here, right? You know, right? Gets wet. And he starts decomposing. The seed starts falling apart. She starts screaming, hey, that wasn't fair! But I'm gone, and nobody's listening. And he's falling apart. There has to be the greatest moment of yirush. But seeds don't germinate until they fall apart. The morale says that the tikva of a new Beis HaMikdash with the future which is supposed to come, with the purity of the new Beis HaMikdash, with all of the veiras being removed, and all of the problems of mankind, and everything, the Bayis Shlishi, needs that it should totally decompose. And out of that will grow something much greater. You need it to fall apart. You need the moment of Yiyush, total despair, it's totally gone. It's nothing. And from that, it can re-germinate and recreate in a much better form. So Rabbi Kiva, the morale says, well, the morale didn't say they had a conversation with the seed. That's my hasafa. The morale says that Rabbi Kiva understood that the Churban Habayis is like the seed decomposing on the ground. The Ramchal says that that's the process of Misa. We're going to come back to Kisa Mesim in a much better form. The process of Misa is the process of removing the impurities, letting it go back to almost zero and rebuilding in a better form. That's what Misa is about. But how is Rabbi Kiva able to know? They'll say, yes, we get it, it's beautiful morale. But how does Rabbi Kiva know that this is what's happening? How does Rabbi Kiva see the connection between these two nevuos, that he understood that this is what it's about? Because I believe, or going to suggest, that Rabbi Kiva saw, again, Chava Adam Shadim B'Tselem, the Russian put us here, there's a reason. We can't be worthless. There can't be yirush. There can't be despair. I want to say where that Gemara, and then we'll end. The Gemara says a story like this: Chizkiyahu HaMelech did not marry. he believed that he's going to have a son as a Rosher. He had in the woods, so a son as a Rosher is going to be a tremendous source of Eris in Klal Yisrael, and he'll be the source of the Churban Beis Hamikdash. He did not want to bring such a child into the world, so he did not marry and have children. The Rosh Hashanah gives Yeshaya Navi a Nevuah to go and tell him you're going to die. There's a decree in Shemayim you're going to die because you're not doing the mitzvah peruvah. So he comes to the Melech. He says, Savis Beischa, give your last will and testament to your household. Kimoistum, you're going to die. And the Morris says that this, he says why? He says because you didn't do the mitzvah peruvah. He says, I didn't do it because I had a good reason, because I'm going to have, I saw with an avoid, I'm going to have a child who's a Russia, and he's given the source of the Korban. So Yeshaya Novi says back to him, that's not your business. You have a mitzvah to do, you have to do what the mitzvahs are, you cannot make cheshbonos. She says, okay, so I have an idea, let me marry your daughter. Maybe the schus of myself, and together with Yeshaya Novi, the God of Lador, the Yeshaya Novi, together will be a schus. So Yeshaya says to him, it's too late. In the Geir. It's not the Geir. You're going to die. I have a Nevuah from Shemayim, you're going to die. So Chizkiyahu turns his face to the wall. And he says, the more, and he starts, the apostle says, he turns to the Kir, he turns to the wall, and he dies. The more says, he said, told Yeshaya, he says, you know, Yeshaya, he says, Klach, take your Nevuah, Utseh, take your Nevuah and leave. I have a Masara from Avi Abba, from my ancestor, my great David HaMelech. It wasn't his grandfather, it was his ancestor. That even if there's a cher of Chad HaMonachos al Tzemar Shalom, the sword is on the person's neck, Al Tishayas Minarachim, don't have Yish. It can still be saved. That's the Gemara. So Mor says, he davened, the Ruach comes to Yeshaya, that he's added 15 years onto his life. They have a child which is Menashe, and the Menashe was through his averus was the source of the Churban of the Beis Hamikdash. But he's also the source of the Mashiach coming eventually. But just think of the Gemara for a second. So a person has tremendous emunah. He sees he's in a terrible situation. There's a sword on his neck. So what does he say? I don't know what a Kadosh Baruch Hu's decree is. Kadosh Baruch Hu's decree to be that I'm supposed to live. The fact that the cherub is here doesn't mean anything. Any moment, it can be removed. The Bersham is not forced upon by situations. If he wants it to not work, it won't work. They'll bring the sword down, the sword will break. The person will fall apart. At that moment, somebody will come in and shoot him. There's hundreds of possibilities what could happen. Right? That's not the situation over here. We know exactly what Kadosh Baruch Hu's decree was. The Navi Emes, the Gadol Hador, told him what the Nevuah, what the Rosh decree was. There's no greater sword on a person's neck than the decree of the Navi. And the Navi, Yeshaya Navi, tells him, you're going to die. He says, get out of here. That's what it means not to have Yish. With a Nevuah from a Kadosh Baruch Hu on the person already. We know what the decree of Jemayim is. There's no more horrendous situation which could ever exist in the Bria than that moment. And Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and we understand his mettle, says, I'm on this ball. Because there's no such thing, there's no, if the Russian put us here, there has to be a purpose. If he wants me here, so there's room to hold on to a Kadosh Baruch Hu even in that moment. And he does. That's Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, you see the destruction. You know there's always tikvah. So Rabbi Akiva says, what's going to purify Klal Yisrael? The mikvah over here is the mikvah of hope. What allows us to have that immersion in the Kadosh Baruch Hu's being is understanding that we know that it cannot be that we're here, that there's Yish. It cannot be we're here for purposeless. There has to be a purpose. So there has to be a source of tahara. Because the person cannot leave us as a mess that we are. Because if we cannot continue to exist that way, and the person wants us to be here, he's going to have to deal with it. So the mikvah over here is not the mikvah. It's the mikvah of tikvah. And the point that we're saying of a hafterecha kamecha, chavarim shenivim b'tzelim, and understanding the value, understanding that the it's not defined by everybody else's success, because the fact that I'm doing what the Bresham wants me to do, and the Bresham made me like this with my challenges, and I'm not defining myself by anybody else, and I'm living with that relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that creates a state of tikva. Because tikva is, the Rebbe Yonah says, it's that feeling of knowing that Kodesh Baruch Hu is there with you with such a clarity that you always know that the Baruch Hashem is totally in control, so you're never worried. That's the mikvah of tikvah, which we metarikalize. So that, I think, is our goal coming through Shua, is to create a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that he's so real to us, that we know we're valuable. Because if he's real, and he wants us to be here, we're valuable. And we, from knowing our value and understanding how important we are and how valuable we are, we will then live with that relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. All of the mitzvahs and everything else, it's all included in that concept of how to make sure that relationship is healthy, how to make sure the relationship is maintained, how to make sure the relationship is doing what it's supposed to be doing. That's all of the mitzvahs, and that's all of the Kabbalah Torah that we're going to do.